Good evening.
Mr. Chairman, I accept your nomination to run and serve as Vice President of the United States of America.
Thunderous applause, and it was supposed to be his night. Trump's VP choice, Indiana Governor Mike Pence, who gushed over Donald Trump and dumped on Hillary Clinton.
Elect Hillary Clinton, and you better get used to being subject to unelected judges using unaccountable power to take unconstitutional actions. So let me say, for the sake of the rule of law, for the sake of the sanctity of life, for the sake of our Second Amendment, and for the sake of all our other God-given liberties, we must ensure that the next president appointing justices to the Supreme Court is Donald Trump.
It wasn't Pence's evening, though. His keynote was upstaged by Texas Senator Ted Cruz.
To those listening, please, don't stay home in November.
Cruz, on the stage at the Republican National Convention, did not endorse Donald Trump.
Stand and speak and vote your conscience. Vote for candidates up and down the ticket who you trust to defend our freedom and to be faithful to the Constitution.
The New York delegation was outraged.
I appreciate the enthusiasm of the New York delegation.
One New York delegate said, I don't know if Cruz will get an invitation to the White House if he doesn't straighten up. According to the Associated Press, the open secret at the RNC was that Cruz came to audition for 2020, an ambition that largely counts on Trump losing this year. Beyond that, Cruz and Trump have had a history of animosity. Trump called the senator lying Ted, and the senator branded Trump a pathological liar and serial philanderer. Trump was seen applauding and waving in the back of the room as Cruz spoke, enjoying the commotion.
Please give a warm welcome to Florida's Attorney General, Pam Bondi.
Also last night in Cleveland, dissatisfaction as Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi took the stage. A growing chorus of Floridians are demanding to know if the state's attorney general's support for Donald Trump crossed legal and ethical lines. They are calling for an investigation into her handling of the Trump University fallout. It's being called a pay-to-look-the-other-way scandal. Mona Shan reports.
Did Bondi drop plans to investigate complaints from more than 100 Florida residents that they had been defrauded by Trump University, just days after she received a $25,000 campaign donation from a Trump foundation? Damian Filer with Progress Florida says his group just delivered more than 6,000 petitions from across the state to U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch, asking for an investigation into the state's chief legal officer.
When the people of Florida feel that they have been wronged somehow and that there is potentially a legal remedy for it, it's their job to look out for them and stand up for them. And the appearance here certainly is that something very different is happening.
Editorial boards from across the state and several watchdog groups, including Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, have also called for further investigation into the matter. Bondi's office insists there is no connection between the donation and a decision not to investigate Trump University, saying she referred complainants to the class action suit that is currently ongoing in New York. I'm Mona Shand reporting.
And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. This evening, as Donald Trump accepts the Republican presidential nomination, families across the country struggle to make ends meet. A recent Washington Post NBC poll found that a third of working, middle, and upper middle class Americans say they struggle to maintain their current standard of living. And for Americans living on the margins, on $7.25 an hour, the current federal minimum wage, the situation is much more dire. There's a measure in the Democratic platform to raise the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour. Rob Scott is Director of Trade and Manufacturing Policy Research at the Economic Policy Institute. He says raising that minimum wage is incredibly important.
It will give a raise to as much as a third of the labor force that has been stuck with stagnant or declining real wages over the past 30 to 35 years. And since 1968, the minimum wage has lost 25% of its real value, despite the fact that productivity, labor productivity, has more than doubled in that period. So the workers are not enjoying the benefits of the growth in the output of their labor, and that's a real problem. And the minimum wage sets a floor that will ensure that they at least get their fair share of what's being produced.
The Trump ticket is opposed to raising the minimum wage. Scott says, in fact, they have gone further.
Mike Pence, the vice presidential candidate, has implemented and signed a right-to-work law that makes it much tougher to organize unions, to bargain collectively. In Indiana, he has banned what are called the prevailing wages on government contracts, which guarantee that that contractors on government projects have to pay the prevailing or union wages in those jobs. And this has reduced wages in Indiana. It's reduced incomes. It's reduced the rate of growth in the state.
What Scott says he wants to see from Donald Trump in his speech tonight is more specifics about currency manipulation.
What he's going to do to specifically to end that policy, I think that we need to see much less emphasis on negotiating new free trade deals and hiring tough trade negotiators. It's not about naming currency manipulators. It's about actually taking action to stop currency manipulation. Countries like China and Japan have been buying up literally trillions of dollars worth of U.S. Dollar-denominated assets, things like treasury bills, mortgage securities, and even stocks and bonds and whole companies. And these purchases drive up the value of the U.S. dollar relative to the Chinese currency. As I said, they act like a subsidy to everything China sends here to the United States, and a tax on everything we try to export to China and everywhere where we compete with China. And so currency manipulation is an illegal intervention in markets designed to achieve commercial dominance of trade with the United States and other countries.
Rob Scott with the Economic Policy Institute says there are ways to stop this. One is to beat China at its own game.
We can purchase Chinese assets to offset their purchases, and that can drive up the demand for the Chinese currency. So literally dollar for dollar, offsetting their purchases with our own purchases. Another thing that we can do and should do is we can tax private purchases of U.S. dollar-denominated assets. We can impose what's called a market access charge, or in other words, a tax on foreign investors who want to buy U.S. assets, and that will reduce demand for U.S. dollars. And again, that will depress the price of a dollar and achieve the same thing. There have been other proposals from economists as to tax even the earnings of these foreign investments in the United States, the interest, for example, earned on treasury bills by foreign governments that are holding U.S. treasury bills. So,
Trump on board with all of this?
He hasn't spoken. I don't know. That's the point. I would like to hear much more about what he proposes to do to actually intervene, much less grandstanding about imposing tough negotiators.
Rob Scott is with the Economic Policy Institute in Washington, D.C. He says he wants to hear less grandstanding tonight from Donald Trump about imposing tough negotiators and more about what he would actually do to intervene to fix problems of currency manipulation, unfair trade, and low levels of public investment in manufacturing and infrastructure. And the Economic Policy Institute has a strategy on their website to raise America's pay. It's at epi.org. As the RNC wraps up tonight in Cleveland, what will be the biggest moment of Donald Trump's presidential campaign tonight is his nomination acceptance speech. Mary Sherman reports.
Jim Barnes is a senior writer for Ballotpedia, a political information website, and he's on the ground at the RNC. After days of anti-Hillary Clinton speeches and family members providing testimony to Trump's character, Barnes says tonight should be focused on the nominee's vision for the country.
I think a lot of viewers and listeners will be expecting something that is presidential. Now, that's a style that sometimes Donald Trump has resisted or completely ignored when he's speaking. But it's imperative that he accept that tone.
After unrest earlier in the convention when some Trump opponents attempted to block his nomination, Barnes believes the delegates are starting to come to terms with the idea of Donald Trump as their nominee, but he says others are still concerned.
A lot of conservatives are suspicious of Trump. They're not sure that he's going to govern as a real conservative president. And of course, there are a lot of party regulars who are frustrated with Trump at times because he runs a bit of a helter-skelter campaign.
But Barnes points out that many GOP leaders are still not on board with Governors John Kasich, Michigan's Rick Snyder, and Illinois' Bruce Rauner, noticeably missing at the RNC, along with many Republican senators, including Rob Portman of Ohio.
Some of those folks, like Portman, are up for re-election, and it's just not in their best interest to be seen at a partisan event when they're going to hope to appeal to swing voters and independents in the fall campaign in order to get elected.
Before Trump takes the stage, they'll hear from his daughter, Ivanka Trump, venture capitalist Peter Thiel, evangelical leader Jerry Falwell Jr., and Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon. For Public News Service, I'm Mary Sherman.
In other news, grassroots organizers from across the country are taking their pledge of resistance from the RNC to the DNC. They are calling it the It Takes Roots to Change the System People's Caravan. Andrea Sears reports.
There are 50 Latino, Black, Asian, Muslim, and working-class white organizers in the caravan working on issues ranging from environmental justice to immigration and police accountability. According to Timmy Liu with the Asian Pacific Environmental Network, they're traveling by bus from Cleveland to Philadelphia.
To draw attention to these communities and what's happening at the local level, and then also make a statement against the racism and misogyny that we're seeing coming from the Republican National Convention.
Also joining the caravan are two representatives from Honduras, including the daughter of slain environmental leader Berta Cáceres. Liu says the caravan is using art and other visual displays to support voter turnout efforts in Ohio and Pennsylvania and political actions at both party conventions.
This election isn't just about selecting one candidate or another, but really about building the infrastructure that we need over the long term to win on key issues that our communities care about, like the environment, immigration, and racial justice.
In Philadelphia, the caravan will be supporting actions around immigration detentions and deportations and challenging the expansion of a toxic oil refinery near poor communities of color. And Liu adds the caravan will also stop in Pittsburgh and Baltimore to work with economic and racial justice groups.
And that's really what I feel is a coalition that we're trying to build that needs to win at the grassroots level, but is also necessary to win at the electoral level as well.
The caravan is being convened by the Grassroots Global Justice Alliance based in North Miami, Florida. For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
In other news, with all the hate speech and bullying, racism and sexism and rudeness in politics, a group of moms have decided to take action. Moms Rising is a nonprofit which has been fighting for safer gun laws, and now they are fighting for civility. They're fighting against bullying, against shocking and offensive threats and speech. The moms worry about how children are being affected by aggressive rhetoric. Kristen Rowe Finkbeiner is co-founder of Moms Rising. She says hate speech coming out of the RNC is jaw-droppingly awful. To fight back, Moms Rising started a hashtag on social media, not on our watch.
And what happens is we're using this when people are using these violent, racist, sexist, bullying tactics of any party and any candidate. We're doing that hashtag, then a little quote of what they've said, and then a link to the news source. Because the other thing that's going on this year is that we're seeing via PolitiFact and the Washington Post Pinocchio report and other investigative journalism reports that there's unprecedented numbers of lies being put forth into the media. So we want to be part of accountability and bringing the dialogue forward back to policy and away from this bullying behavior. Because
so what are some of the examples where you've put the hashtag not on our watch?
Just yesterday we had hashtag not on our watch. Hillary Clinton should be put in front of the firing squad and shot, end quote. That was from Trump advisor and New Hampshire State Representative Al Bodarso, and he was describing Hillary Clinton. And, you know, let's just have a moment here and say that in a democracy, we don't shoo people. That's not a democracy. That's, you know, fascism. And that's not where we want to go. So it's okay to disagree about the issues. It's okay to hate policies and have passionate conversations. It's not okay to hate people and call for violence toward people. And that's not the direction we want to go with our country. We also use the hashtag many times recently around Scott Baio, who said some very horrible things that I'm sure people can Google. I don't want to repeat it. Tamron Hall did a terrific interview on MSNBC where she really held him accountable that people can look up to. We've used the hashtag not on our watch also around some of the white supremacist statements that have come out of, directly out of the RNC. Representative Steve King from Iowa said that he wondered if there are any other, quote, subgroups besides whites making contributions to civilization. So that's wrong. It's racist. It's untrue. Obviously, many, 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 many other people have made contributions to our civilization. I mean, it's flat out white supremacy. It's not okay. So hashtag not on our watch exploded around that as well. And, you know, I could go on, sadly, about the amount of times that the hashtag not on our watch has been used. But it's horrifying, and one of the important things is that women in particular have incredible power to change the dialogue on social media. People are getting more than 30% of their news on Facebook. People are participating in Twitter, and we're able to really change the dialogue by saying, hey, no, this is not okay. You know, we're not going to sit here and watch this train wreck happen slowly to our democracy and to our nation, again, as our children are watching. And the things that are being said on the campaign trail are things that you'd get a detention for in elementary school, you know? They're no-brainers that they're not okay. So it's time to call it out and shut it down.
And what about our children? What have you heard from other moms about their children who are watching what's going on and who are watching how hate speech is becoming normalized in this country?
Yeah, it's horrible. I mean, it's really horrible. The Southern Poverty Law Center did a study. They reached out to teachers, and two-thirds of the teachers reported that they had at least one child in their classroom who had been negatively impacted by the hate speech. And one of my friends, who happens to be Muslim, said that she had her nephew crying because he thought that if Trump won, they would have to leave the country or his parents might be killed. You know, I've had tons of stories like that where kids are worried about being, you know, injured, the parents being injured, about, you know, having to leave the country. I mean, these are people who are citizens, who are people, who are important players in our economy of the United States of America. This is not okay to have happening on our watch. And we're seeing also an uptick in bullying behavior. We've seen several high school sports teams, sadly, in a couple different states, yell at their opposing teams who had more diverse players, Trump, Trump, Trump. And so, you know, Trump, the name Trump in and of itself is being used to taunt in racist ways that are harmful. It's harmful.
And what about bullying as a technique to get one's way across and not really discuss any issues?
Yeah, that's certainly happening at the top level with Trump in particular. He hasn't talked about hardly any issues. So it's not okay to not talk about the policies and only spread hate. He seems to be running for insulter-in-chief or bully-in-chief instead of president of the United States of America. But one thing that everybody who's listening and all of us know is that we still have an incredible power to vote, and that right now silence is consent. We're hearing stories of people who are so disgusted by the current trend that they're like, I just won't vote. Well, that is not okay. I have to say, I've been working in politics since I was about 19 years old in one way or another. And I've heard a lot of times when people say, hey, the sky is falling. You have to vote. Your vote really matters. Well, this year, not voting, staying home because you're disgusted with the process, is actually a vote for Trump.
Well, it's not just the top of the ticket, though. You know, there are other offices at stake that people need to go out and vote for. And I think that gets lost in the message.
Yeah, that's true. That's right. I mean, and at the city, county, and state level, certainly on, you know, all sides of the aisle, there's some spectacular candidates who are really talking about the policies, who are really thinking about how to move our communities forward, and who definitely deserve our attention. And we don't want to only give attention to the worst offenders. We want to also lift up elected leaders and other leaders who will do better for our country instead of do worse.
Kristen Rowe Finkbeiner is co-founder of Moms Rising. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. Mohammed Ba, he was killed in his home 4 years ago when emergency service officers forced their way into his apartment with guns drawn. He was shot 8 times. The last shot was fired at close range. Today, Hawa Ba, Mohammed Ba's mom and other family members, her lawyer, members of the Justice Committee, they all met with the Department of Justice in an attempt to get justice for Mohammed Ba. Yulsan Lim is with the Justice Committee.
We met with Assistant U.S. Attorney David Kennedy, as well as representatives of the Civil Division, the Criminal Division, and the Public Corruption Division. They basically informed Mrs. Ba and us that they're still looking at her son's case. And they gave us very little information about how far they've gotten in the investigation, or I should say the review of the case. They expressed to us that the legal challenges and the legal restrictions that they face in prosecuting and looking into these types of cases, we were able to ask a number of questions and then the meeting concluded.
And so the officer that was involved in shooting at close range, is this officer still on duty?
That is our understanding.
Uh-huh.
Our understanding is that there were many officers involved in both illegally entering Mohammed's home without a warrant, and against NYPD protocol, and then engaged in basically an assault on him, including an officer who fired multiple times, the last shot being fired while Mohammed lay incapacitated on the ground at close range, so execution style. These officers are still on the force collecting paychecks, and no one has been held accountable. And so Ms. Ba, we're supporting Ms. Ba and her demand, not only for answers as to why this happens and what happened, but also for accountability and justice for her son.
To follow the case on Twitter, go to @WatchTheCops. This past weekend, hundreds marched through steamy Brooklyn streets to mark the second anniversary of the killing of unarmed Staten Island man Eric Garner. Sally O'Brien was there, and she sends us this report.
Justice!
Now!
What do we want?
Justice!
And when do we want it?
Now!
Say his name!
Eric Garner!
Say his name!
Eric Garner!
Say his name!
Eric Garner!
No
peace! No,
I hope
not. No peace!
Led by Eric Garner's mother, Gwen Carr, arm in arm with other mothers who've lost sons to police violence, other family members, supporters, Black Lives Matter, and other anti-police brutality activists, the National Action Network, the Rude Mechanical Orchestra Marching Band, and many outraged citizens, people marched, chanting, "Say his name, Eric Garner," demanding justice in a death that was seen around the world in a video depicting NYPD officer Daniel Pantaleo holding the unarmed 300-pound Garner in a chokehold as he cried out, "I can't breathe." Pantaleo was cleared of all criminal charges, and now, 2 years later, a federal Justice Department investigation is still underway. Gwen Carr says she will not quit until she gets justice for her son.
There has been no indictment at the state level. It's in the hands of the DOJ now. We're waiting for a decision from them, which we haven't heard. But it's been 2 years, and we're really anxiously waiting a decision.
And what does the district attorney say is the reason for a no indictment?
There was no explanation. There was no transparency. And I think that was very unfair to our family. We do need to know exactly what did go on in that grand jury, but the judge ruled against letting us know.
And what would justice look like to you?
Well, justice looks like when all of those police officers who was present that day who took part in my son's death stand accountable for their gross misconduct because no one did their job appropriately. So it's not a black and white issue, it's a wrong and right issue. When all of them are convicted and put in jail, then I'll feel some sense of justice. And it really won't be justice. It would be closure.
Saturday's march, mirroring many since the July 5th and 6th police killings of Alton Sterling in Baton Rouge and Philando Castile in suburban Minnesota, was marked by multiculturalism. Black and white united against racism and police violence.
Racism has a long legacy in this country. The wealth of this country was built on slavery. I don't expect it to change easily. I think as more people come up and are educated and there's more movement and marches like this and we keep working at it, we will keep working at making some of those changes.
What do you think the role of white people is in this struggle?
I think white people have a very, very important role to play, educating other white people and trying to take stands whenever we can and understanding how we benefit from white skin privilege.
Also leading the march with Eric Garner's family and the other mothers were the Reverends Al Sharpton and Herbert Daughtry. The 85-year-old Daughtry, pastor of House of the Lord Church, marched the entire 5 miles and then spoke from the stage set up in Prospect Park.
To the mothers, these brave, courageous women who have come from near and far to be here today, and we commend them very much. They've been an inspiration to all of us. And so we thank them very much. I've been at this, 1972. Ricky Borden, 11 years old, was killed in Staten Island. In 1973, it was Clifford Glover. He was only 10. In 1974, it was 14-year-old Claude Reese. In 1976, it was 15-year-old Randy Evans. And on, you got the picture. These killer cops have been doing this for years and years. If they would have moved in 1972, if they would have corrected things at that time, can you imagine how many people would still be alive today?
Dr. Reverend Herbert Daughtry of Brooklyn's House of the Lord Church. And for WBAI News, I'm Sally O'Brien.
And that's the WBAI Evening News for Thursday, July 21st, 2016. I am hoping that you will support WBAI so that we can get our phones turned back on, so we can pay the Empire State Building our expensive more than $50,000 a month. That you will become a listener sponsor to WBAI, that you will just do that, that you will go to give2wbai.org and become a listener sponsor, become a buddy, give us $10 a month or $25 for a year. That's all, just to become a member of WBAI, become a listener supporter. WBAI needs you. Reggie will give you the telephone number. We just need you. We really need you to support our news, to support WBAI, and we thank you so much.